You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early, so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Thursday, April 25th, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we are going to gather around the virtual water cooler to talk about what we've been up to. My name is Ben Pearson. I'm an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film staff writer Bill Bria.
Holla.
Bill, I wanted to have you on primarily because you had a chance to see a specific movie in IMAX last night that I wanted you to tell me about. But I figured we could also make this sort of like a mini water cooler episode and talk about a few other things that we've been watching as well. But first up, though, tell me about what you saw last night.
So last night I went to the AMC Universal City Walk to see Hereditary in IMAX, which is part of A24 and IMAX's series of IMAX re-releases, a screening series they're calling it, in which they starting last month in March with Ex Machina and continuing with Hereditary this month. And then for each month for the rest of the year, I believe they plan until a year from when they started. So I think maybe until next March of 2025, they're going to be showing one of their classics in IMAX in the format, remastered and optimized for the format. So this was obviously Ari Aster's Hereditary, his debut film, which I've seen many times before and adored because I'm a big Aster fan. And this was revelatory in a couple ways. One was just by virtue of the fact that, okay, let me explain, of course, to maybe our listeners who maybe don't know, the AMC CityWalk IMAX is the one of the two IMAX screens in Los Angeles, where I'm based, which have generally the full 1:43 to 1 ratio of the screen. So it's
Like true gigantic
IMAX. I guess there's maybe a bigger one. There's a Regal somewhere out in, I don't know if it's Encino. No, it's maybe further out or something, but there's one that's maybe slightly bigger that's in California, which is prohibitive to drive to. But generally, these are the two biggest ones in the city. Apparently, I guess the biggest one in the country, if I'm not mistaken, is the AMC Lincoln Square in New York, where I used to live. So I actually downgraded when I moved out here, but that's okay. But yeah, so I think IMAX fans and moviegoing fans know that there is like a disparity in IMAX screens in terms of, you know, where you go and what size they are, but generally, if you're looking at the biggest, you know, the tallest, biggest ones, that's generally the full IMAX format, which isn't quite necessary for these A24 re-releases, because of course, none of the films that they're re-releasing in the format were shot in the format. So you're not going to get, you know, a Christopher Nolan or a Dune Part 2 experience with Hereditary suddenly, you know, because I don't even know if that's possible to do. I don't know how the technology works for a blow up, but I think it would look bad. It would probably look something close to like a pan and scan if they had done that, you know?
Right.
So fortunately they didn't do that. They keep, you know, the films in their proper aspect ratio, but still, you know, with the, obviously it's a larger screen. So you're just seeing it in, you know, in a larger size anyway than you would on a normal, you know, I forget the dimensions of the normal film screen, but you know, it would be obviously bigger than that. And Hereditary, as you know, fans of the film might know, is a very detail oriented movie. You know, they even make point early in the film in a classroom scene of one of the, Peter's teachers, who's the son of the ill-fated family in the movie, saying stuff like, oh, these people ignored all the signs. How could they do that? And, you know, Aster has a ball putting all these signs in front of their faces and our faces. And what's wild is how much more, I think this happens, you know, normally with any rewatch of this movie, you're going to see more things you missed the first time around, the second time around, whatever. But the IMAX screen just allows you to see those types of things easier because, you know, now it's in your face in a bigger way and all that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And another thing that was pretty revelatory about this screening was that, and of course, my experience is mine, you know, your mileage may vary. It's going to differ no matter where you are, you know, depending on where you are, where you go. But I happen to be at the 10:30 p.m. screening and just, you know, by virtue of my schedule and what I had booked. And not only was the stadium full, it wasn't packed. You know, there was obviously a few empty seats here and there, but it was fairly full for a Wednesday night of a re-release. So that just tells you how popular this movie is and, you know, the A24 brand, I'm sure, as well. But I think this movie in particular, and you could really hear a pin drop that entire screening. I mean, wow. Nobody was there to mess around. Nobody was there to, there was a guy next to me, I have to say, who was doing what we've seen in the recent Spider-Man re-releases, where it's kind of, some people treat it like a rock concert almost, where they want to interact and sort of have the clout of like, look, I was here, look, I'm seeing it, you know. So there was a dude, I think he was trying to take a few screen caps or pics or, you know, whatever, of, you know, title cards or something. But I will say he was fairly discreet about it. He didn't have the brightness on at all, so I didn't get a glare, you know, or anything like that. I just noticed him, you know, doing that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Other than that one guy, there was nobody talking, there was nobody making a mess, there was no, like, you know, it wasn't what you would think of as the typical, you know, unfortunate packed screening of a horror film. This was a very reverent screening, and I think everybody was there to try and get creeped out in the best way, and I think they did.
I wonder if it was because this is kind of like a one night only thing, right? I think.
Oh yeah, no, Ex, I think Machina, it has something to do with it too.
Yeah, Ex Machina was playing for one night. It was like March 27th. This Hereditary, the only IMAX experience, was last night, and then the next one that they've announced is Uncut Gems by the Safdie brothers, which is coming up on Wednesday, May 22nd. If people want to check that out in IMAX, check your local listings because maybe you can experience that movie in that format that way. Or at least on that screen anyway. But it's been a while since I've seen the original Hereditary. I spoke with Toni Collette about that movie at the time. And I just remember being like so blown away by her performance. I was going to ask you if there were any particular images or anything that stuck with you or sort of stood out to you in the IMAX format, Bill, or in the IMAX screening, I should say, but I'm loath to kind of spoil this movie for people. Like maybe there's a chance that some people haven't gotten around to seeing this yet. And yeah. I feel like it's one of the sort of premier horror movies of the past, whatever, 10 years or something. So,
oh yeah. And obviously, as I said, being a fan of Aster and being more recently familiar with his more recent work, it was another revelation of a sort to go back to his debut here and realize this might be, in my opinion, his most accessible film. You know, even Midsommar, as beloved as that one is too, you know, has its surrealistic, you know, bits and everything like that. Mm-hmm. This one, once you know the game, once you know what's going on, and you will by the end, it's pretty brutal and pretty, I won't say self-explanatory because there's obviously a lot of ambiguity about, you know, what this means, what that means, what could have happened here, what could have happened there. But of Aster's films, of the three, you know, I think this is the one that's the easiest for the general audience to get, you know, instead of the very intentionally off-putting Beau Is Afraid, which was also released in IMAX, which was kind of, its own provocation by Aster and A24. But what I wanted to say too, Ben, is that what seems to be a trend with these, and I've only been to a couple. I've been to this one. I've been to A24's re-release of Darren Aronofsky's Pi, which was revelatory in its own way, just because that film famously was very grainy and very indie, very 90s. And to see it looking so good, but not losing any of its grit, you know, in that format was, you know, extraordinary. But also their re-release of Jonathan Demme's Stop Making Sense, the Talking Heads concert film.
Oh, yeah.
And that, you know, screening was fun in a completely unique way to that film. What I'm trying to say is there's a trend here, but it's not a trend that's film by film. It seems to be appropriate to the film. So to explain myself, if Hereditary was, you know, you could hear a pin drop, people were super attentive, people were really wanting to get it, let it get under their skin and let it creep them out. Stop Making Sense was another thing for that film where people were getting up in the aisles and dancing in front of the screen and, you know, literally treating it like they were at a concert in a way that wasn't disruptive to people who maybe didn't want to do that and were just sitting down. And so this wasn't a Rocky Horror thing where, you know, half the audience is in on the joke and half the audience is maybe trying not to do that. This right. was definitely a celebratory, you know, interaction with the film in the way that, you know, you would maybe want, I think. So I don't know what Uncut Gems is going to be, is what I'm trying to say. Like, I, you know, maybe people are going to be, you know, taking, you know, taking bets on what's gonna be cooler. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah. Full on like anxiety attacks running around the theater. Who knows? Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, I think what your description of these events are, to me, it sounds like sort of a continuation of a conversation that like Ryan Scott and I have been having on this podcast for a little while, in particular about like the eventizing, you know, movie going in, yeah. especially in the sort of like post-pandemic period or whatever. And like, it sounds like everybody who seeks these movies out is doing so on purpose. It's not a lark. It's not the same thing as, you know, in the 90s when you and I were growing up, people would just show up at movie theaters and be like, what are we going to see tonight? I don't know. Let's just like go check something out. It seems like these are things that people are like planning for and like making, you know, making a part of their night in a big way, like a centerpiece of their evening or whatever, to go check these things out. So I hope that this means that like we're going to see more re-releases from other companies and stuff getting in on this a little bit and just trying to create opportunities for people to get excited about going to the movies again, especially in, as we've talked about ad nauseum, a period right now where we're sort of like in this lull waiting for, you know, the big summer movies to come out. And like, especially after the strikes and everything of last year, like 2024 is sort of like on thin ice in terms of like being a big movie year at the box office. So like any little thing like this helps, I think, and driving that kind of like, maybe driving that into viewers' heads a little bit of like, hey, here are some more opportunities for you to make a night of going out to the movies in a big way and celebrating a film you already love. It just seems like a cool thing to me.
Oh, yeah. And in the companion piece that will, of course, when this podcast is around, will also be up on the site that I'm writing, I'm also discussing, you know, the fact that this A24 is not exactly the first studio to, well, certainly not the first people to ever do this. I mean, re-releases used to be a more common occurrence back in the old days before mm-hmm. either of us were born, where, you know, home media wasn't a thing yet. But, you know, in recent years, Warner Brothers has done a re-release or two. In fact, they did earlier this year with Tenet. And then back in, I think, 2018, they had an anniversary, you know, re-release of 2001, A Space Odyssey, along with...
Yeah, they did Casablanca last year that I saw Casablanca, in theaters, which was amazing. Yeah.
So they've been pretty committed to keeping that going. And I think A24 is the most exciting next step of that, where, you know, Warner's has generally been re-releasing the classics, the big ones, the big titles that everybody kind of knows and loves. And these are typically films, you know, from them that are event films, you know, and mm-hmm. the A24 library isn't quite as event-based. You know, the A24 really hasn't ever made, you know, their mega action. Like, they've made films with action in it. They've made films with, you know, exciting stuff in it. Obviously, Civil War is a recent example of, you know, what's close to being an A24 blockbuster, if there is one.
Yeah.
But what I think this is really encouraging is the fact that, you know, films like Ex Machina and Hereditary and Uncut Gems aren't necessarily the first thing you might think of when you think of, you know, let's go to see this in IMAX. And they're kind of reconfiguring what IMAX is for the public in terms of, hey, this is a great format. It is something you really can't get at home. Even if you've seen these movies a million times before, even if you own these movies, you know, you're still going to have a unique experience if you come to see it in this way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that's the thing. Like, what is his name? Stephen Sommers' version of The Mummy is turning 25 this year, and they're bringing that back in theaters. But I don't think it's in IMAX, and that's one where I'm kind of like, I love that movie, but like it's also just streaming, and I might even have it on DVD or something like that too. Yeah. So like, you know, it's like one of those things where I'm like, if that was playing in IMAX, I think that would give me more incentive to go and check it out on you know, the biggest possible screen or whatever near me, and like really be enveloped in it. But when it's just at a normal theater, sort of in on a normal screen or whatever, it's a little bit of a bigger ask for audiences to sort of try to differentiate that experience or whatever. So yeah, I'm glad that A24 is doing this, and I didn't realize that they were actually going to be keeping this going once a month throughout the whole year, basically. So I'm excited to hear that, because I'm curious now, like what other projects they're going to be doing. I think my understanding is that they're going to be announcing the June movie sometime soon in the next few days or weeks or whatever. So I'll definitely keep my eye out for that, because I'm curious about what that might look like.
Oh, me too.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about some other stuff that we've been watching. Actually, before we do that, let's take a quick break and then we'll be right back.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Okay, I caught up with The First Omen and Immaculate recently. Loved both of them. I don't really want to get too much into them, partly because I don't want to spoil anything for people who haven't had a chance to check them out yet, and also partly because I saw them in basically the same day, and it was like a week or so ago, and already some of the scenes are kind of blurring together for me of like which one was in which movie. I mean, it was a really cool double feature experience in that way, because they're so similar, both like thematically and aesthetically and narratively in some ways too. But I was all excited to do the double feature. And then now on the other side of that experience, I'm kind of, a part of me is regretting doing it that way, because the experiences started to blur just a little bit. So I guess I would just use this as an opportunity to give like a light warning to anybody who maybe had that same excitement that I did, that like it might be better to just space out the viewing just a little bit to kind of keep them, you know, separate experiences in your mind or whatever. But I really liked both of these movies. Have you seen one either of them yet? Okay.
Oh, yes.
What'd you think about them?
Fantastic. I think it's really impressive to have, you know, this year's, I mean, the example we all go to is Armageddon Deep Impact, but, you know, to have two films, obviously, you know, with such shared DNA, and yet they couldn't be, I'm not going to say they couldn't be more different in style, because there's obviously some shared stuff too, but I think it's interesting how, they have very, very tightly similar themes, and yet they come at them from different angles, which is exciting to me.
Yeah.
Again, I'm trying to avoid, you know, spoilery stuff, but but I think that what's really engaging about it is that you have in both, you know, a lead performance from a rising actress, you know, Sydney Sweeney in Immaculate and Nell Tiger-Free in First Omen. And those, I feel like, couldn't be more different, even though, you know, both are ostensibly the heroines of each film. You know, Sweeney is, you know, fierce by the end of her film, and really just a great sort of the final girl trope, if you will. Mm-hmm. Whereas Tiger-Free is, you know, really an actress to watch in terms of what she's able to do with her physicality, but also ambiguity and tone. You know, she's a really fascinating performer. So
yeah, both of them were amazing. And I was a little rude to Sydney Sweeney after Anyone But You. And I was saying, like, I'm looking forward to seeing Immaculate because I've heard she's great in that. And she actually is truly great in that. And like, especially the ending of Immaculate is like one of my favorite moments on on film this year. Like, she is unbelievable in that. So it definitely seems like my engagement with her as an actress seems to be on like a project by project level right now. But man, she really, really brought it when it came to Immaculate. So
I think she's a very savvy person. She's also, you know, a producer of the film. You know, famously, the story goes that she auditioned for it, you know, when she was a teen and then remembered it all these years later and got the project restarted, you know, once she had the clout. I know that, you know, there's a seeming, you know, interest in, on her part of like, you know, jumping from genre to genre, from type of movie to type of movie, showing her range, which I do think she has. And yet I really hope she continues to do some more horror because I really think that it fits.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So tell me about something else that you've been watching recently.
Well, I've been watching some stuff in order to prep for the upcoming release of Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, which I'm very, very excited about as a big apes head. I don't think they call we call ourselves that as fans, but it's okay. I just made that up. Ape Man? No, I'll think of it. But one thing I did not know about going into, you know, the last couple weeks was the career of director Wes Ball. I did not see the Maze Runner films originally when they came out back in 2014 and then 2015. And then I think the last one was 2018. And, you know, partly that's just because, you know, time, you know, things got away from me. But also it, you know, those films came during that, you know, and tail end of the glut of YA adaptations. Of course, we all know what happened to the ill-fated Divergent series. And I heard some buzz when those films were originally released in theaters, the Maze Runner ones. And yet it wasn't strong enough to get me to really put it on my radar. But once knowing, you know, that Wes Ball is behind, is the man directing Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, and just seeing those trailers looking as fabulous and amazing as they do, I thought, okay, I have to check out these Maze Runner films. So I've only seen the first two so far. I was hoping to watch the third tonight as we record this. But I'm really impressed, not just from the fact that, from everything that Wes Ball and his cohorts say on the commentary tracks for the films, I'm not familiar with the original books that they're based on, but it sounds like they really did a great job of adapting the books. And I underlined the word adapting because it seems like they've made a lot of fundamental changes to the narrative, which really serves a movie version of that story rather than, oh, here's exactly the way it happens in the book. Let's stay true to the book. Because that's one of my pet peeves, is that I do think that fidelity to source material is too big of an issue these days in terms of IP. You know, and I think something like the Marvel Cinematic Universe is a great example of doing it the right way, in my opinion, which is you still have, you know, a fidelity to the characters, to the original source material, but you're remixing things. You're, you know, giving your fans and your audience a new experience rather than, oh, here's just this translated to the screen, you know?
Yeah. Instead of the Disney live action remake.
Right. Well, effect. Oh yeah. Yeah. Let's not go there.
So but, I wanted to ask you real quick about the, you mentioned the commentary. Did you watch the movie sans commentary and then go back and rewatch? Okay. Wow, man, that's like true dedication, Bill.
No, I, you know, I pride myself. I mean, this comes from just, I'm not going to go into my whole background as a person, but, I had it ingrained by my parents that, you know, if you spend money on something that you really need to use it and not waste, you know, don't be wasteful. So every physical media that I buy, I try and like go through all of the material because hey, it's there, you know.
That's awesome.
It means it takes me forever, but you know.
So I have not watched any of those movies as well, but or either, I should say, but I have all of them. I got like a box set or something. Oh. I want to say that Fox sent it to me 1 year. And Jacob Hall has been sort of singing the praises of Wes Ball ever since those Maze Runner films came out. He was one of those voices that you mentioned that was kind of like trying to generate some buzz at the time, saying like, hey, this guy's actually like a filmmaker to watch. You guys should pay attention to him. And I remember him saying like, Ben, you got to check these out. And I keep swearing to him, like, one day I promise you, I will watch these Maze Runner movies.
Let me pitch you. Okay. So this would have gotten me to see them sooner if I had this pitch. So maybe it'll work on you. So Maze Runner, think of Maze Runner as Pitch Black, and think of Maze Runner 2, The Scorch Trials, as Chronicles of Riddick, where it's like, you have this initial film, which is very contained, very one premise, like one problem film of like, we're stuck in this maze. How do we get out of the maze? Who put us in the maze? Let's get out of the maze. You know, film 2 is out of the maze because they, like, no spoiler, but I guess spoiler, they get out of the maze at the end of film 1. Mm-hmm. But film 2 is the world in which this maze was constructed and why, and what these, you know, kids are, what they mean to the rest of this, you know, post-apocalyptic universe. It is partially, a kind of Mad Max-ish, you know, journey across the wasteland. It is partially an adaptation of The Last of Us. And I mean that sincerely. Wow. And it's partially, you know, a YA, you know, us against the system sort of narrative. So yeah, definitely check them out.
Okay, I love that recommendation. I wanted to mention also that I caught up with all four episodes of Conan O'Brien Must Go, which is on Max right now. Are you a Conan guy, Bill?
I do love Conan. I did not see Must Go yet, but I do love Conan.
Yeah, Conan was like the guy for me growing up. Like I remember being in college and like staying up late and watching the late night show and all of that. And he's been like the only late night show host that I've really, really cared about consistently for the longest, you know, percentage of my life or whatever. So I'm always sort of inclined to laugh at whatever his nonsense is these days. And I really like these travel shows that he's been doing recently. I think there was another one called Conan Without Borders that came out a few years ago. But now Conan O'Brien Must Go is the new one that's streaming on Max right now. And it's basically exactly what you would expect from Conan going to some of these locations. And I think some of them he's actually been to before. Like there's an episode about Ireland, and I remember specifically that he did at least one sort of remote segment on his old show where he went to Ireland. So like it's not all necessarily brand new stuff or brand new locales, I should say, but it is like brand new experiences that he's having. He's obviously meeting new people. The premise of the show is that he has a very popular podcast, and occasionally people will, I guess, I don't listen to the podcast, so I'm not sure exactly what the format is.
Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend, or
yes, that's right, yeah. And so sometimes his listeners will like FaceTime in or whatever, and video chat with him, and like talk about their lives and whatever. And he's just like shows up. He surprises these people at their homes, basically, like a few of his listeners. That's what the idea behind this show is. And then he spends the rest of the time just like goofing off around the country and doing, you know, ridiculous Conan stuff. So it's just a really, really fun. I mean, each episode is like 30 minutes or something, and it's like a really fun way to end the night. I know a lot of people are like, you know, knee deep in like all of the great dramas of peak TV and all that kind of stuff. And my wife and I in particular really enjoy like watching that stuff and then trying to finish things off on a little bit of a lighter note before we go to bed. So it's kind of like the perfect palate cleanser type of show. I would recommend checking this out. It's called Conan O'Brien Must Go, and it's on Max. I know we're wrapping up here, Bill. We're getting close to the end. I wanted to see if there was anything else that you wanted to mention that you've seen recently that you thought was worth spotlighting here.
I have something, but people's mileage may vary.
Okay, go ahead. I'm intrigued.
Okay. I did tweet about this recently too, because last weekend, just apropos of, you know, what I usually do if, what I started doing during the pandemic is sort of programming little, you know, physical media marathons for myself on weekends if nothing's going on. And I did one of those last weekend, and I just happened to pick off the shelf something I had purchased and did not watch yet, and was a little blown away by, I don't know how ashamed I'm supposed to be about it, but I'm saying it. It is 1991's Cool as Ice, the Vanilla Ice.
Yes, I've seen this movie, yes.
Okay, all right. Well, first of all, I know that there's a trend on social media right now of, oh my God, remember when movies used to look like this? But remember when movies used to look like that? This is the Vanilla Ice movie. We did not need to go hard on the visuals for the Vanilla Ice movie, because nobody really ever did. Anybody ever take that guy seriously, including himself? I don't know. Maybe
didn't Janusz Kaminski?
Janusz Kaminski shot this movie, guys.
Yeah, wow.
And this, I have a conspiracy theory that it's very possible Steven Spielberg saw this movie and called Janusz Kaminski afterwards to be like, bro, let's hook up, because like you just shot the hell out of this Vanilla Ice movie. I have a comedy side project that I've been doing. My friend Sam Haft, who is one of the songwriters of Has Been Hotel, and we have our band Sam and Bill, and we did an April Fool's joke about a year ago where we pretended to be a bunch of fake bands, one of which was something called the Pump Boys, which are like very Marky Mark sort of, you know, they lift weights and they rap. Cool as Ice feels to me like a movie the Pump Boys would have made. It like it several points people are unironically being like, oh yeah, you know, I mean, just the most time capsule stuff of 1991 you could possibly imagine. Yep. And yet it looks great. It is bonkers in a way that I don't think, and just, you know, to indulge the sort of nostalgic, oh, we don't make them like they used to. It's bonkers in a way that I don't think you can make something bonkers anymore these days, in terms of like there's enough earnestness in that movie to make it really genuinely silly. Yeah.
Yeah, that's like one of the defining qualities of it, I think, is like it is so silly, but it's also so serious. Like you can tell that everybody is taking it deadly seriously. I mean, there are some like goofy moments that I feel like they're probably in on the joke for.
Yeah.
Like there's quite a bit where they're not. And it's man, what an experience. I mean, I don't know if I would say that this is like, it's certainly not a great movie, and it's certainly not a movie that I would be like, oh, everybody has to rush out and see this. But like said, you know, your mileage may vary, but like if you're in the mood for checking out early Kominsky and like, you know, watching something that is that will certainly give you plenty of laughs, you could do worse than Cool as Ice, I think.
Yeah, and what's really great is that if you're a physical media maven like myself, there's this German company called Turbine, which released it on Blu-ray last year, which is where I got it. They do include the Riff Tracks commentary track on the film as well. So you get the best of both worlds.
Amazing. Okay. So the last movie that I wanted to talk about is a film called Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid from 1982. You've seen this? Okay.
Oh yeah.
I have never seen this. And the part of the reason that I saw it was, I think it was recommended on, I'm trying to remember what podcast now, somebody, some other podcast that I listened to mentioned this. And I was thinking of it sort of in conversation almost with Sugar, the show on Apple TV Plus. I don't know. Have you seen any of that show?
The Colin Farrell series? No.
Okay. So the Colin Farrell series, he plays a private detective in LA, and he's obsessed with movies. His character is obsessed with movies. And so there are shots in Sugar where like the show is edited in such a way where his character will like walk through a location, and then the show will sort of like rapid fire cut a bunch of old Hollywood classic noir detective story, PI story kind of things, pieces of footage into this show, but he never really interacts with the characters or anything. It's more of like just the show itself being in conversation with the old Hollywood that it's kind of homaging and referencing.
And you know what else that reminds me of? If you ever saw the old Brian Benben show on HBO, Dream On.
Oh no, I didn't. I've never heard of that.
Yeah, that was where, for, you know, it was a sitcom, so they did it obviously in that vein, but they have, you know, they would have interspersed throughout certain scenes clips of old, you know, movies, because I guess the gimmick was that the lead character was a big old movie fan. So
okay, interesting. Yeah, so Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid is that, but interactive, basically. Like Steve Martin plays a PI, and he actually, the way that this movie works is that there's a big conspiracy or mystery that he's trying to solve, and he actually interacts with Humphrey Bogart over the phone. Like he'll have conversations that are, where it's actual footage from existing movies that is cut in, where he and Carl Reiner, who co-wrote the script with him and directed this movie, and I think George Geip is the other writer.
Yeah.
They actually just like figured out, they sort of reverse engineered, like, okay, we have this clip from this old movie of Humphrey Bogart on the phone. How can we come up with something funny for Steve Martin to say on the other end of the phone and have them interact that way? And there's like Barbara Stanwyck is in this, Lana Turner, Charles Laughton, Fred McMurray. I mean, like the list of the cast is unbelievable. James Cagney, I mean, Burt Lancaster. It's like the list goes on and on, because they're able to just use, I think it's something like 19 different movies, where they just cut in really interesting ways. And they'll have like over the shoulder shots where they clearly get like a double, a body double to step in and like wear the same hair piece that Barbara Stanwyck, you know, where it looks like Barbara Stanwyck is actually in the shot with Steve Martin, but it's not. And then they'll cut to the reverse shot, and it's a shot from, you know, it's a movie from the 1940s or whatever. And it's just really interesting. I don't think I've seen a movie do that in quite that way before. So I just wanted to give it a shout out here in case anybody would, you know, thought that was interesting and might want to seek it out. I think I rented it for like $4 on Amazon or something like that. But what are your memories from that?
Oh, my memories are, you know, I think this may have been the first Martin Reiner film I ever saw as a kid. I don't think I saw The Jerk first, even though The Jerk came first. This was their follow-up to The Jerk. Mm-hmm. And before Man with Two Brains, which is another great one. And All of Me might have been first for me. Anyway, so Dead Men was pretty early on. And I don't know if this, you know, tracks, but stay with me here. I'll put on my film historian hat. I've often thought of Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid as kind of a proto YouTube movie, like YouTube circa 2010, you know, because in that era of internet humor, you were getting a lot of these supercuts. You were getting a lot of intercutting jokes of, you know, we all remember, well, if you were on the internet those days, you remember the Shining trailer recut to be like a, you know, a comedy, you know, family film. So it was kind of, I felt an early version of that humor, I guess, following on from something like, you know, not to invoke the name of a sex pest, but Woody Allen's What's Up Tiger Lily, you know, where you would have the Japanese, I think it was Japanese film redubbed by comedians. So this was kind of the midpoint between that and, you know, what you would find later on in the internet humor. Mm-hmm. So this remixed, you know, film clips humor was something fairly innovative at the time. You know, what it lacks in a coherent narrative, you know, who cares? It's a comedy, right? So if you're going for like a big, like a great story, you know, you don't come to them and don't apply for that. But I wanted to say too, is that the score that is written for the film by, I believe it's Miklos Roza, one of his last scores, if not his very last score. And he was a veteran of film noirs of the past, you know, doing some great, you know, all-time classics, King of Kings, as well as, you know, the Green Berets, Golden Voyage of Sinbad he worked on. So Ben-Hur, you know, and as well as a bunch of actual noirs back in the days of, you know, the heyday of film noir that this movie is referring to. So mm-hmm.
It's I was reading that he basically had to like come up with his new score for this movie in order to sort of match the score that they could not remove or excise or whatever from those clips that they were sort of importing into this film. Cause like, I guess the technology wasn't quite there yet. So that must've been like an extremely interesting challenge for him, especially since he probably scored some of the movies that they were, you know, they were actually riffing on. So just a really cool idea for a movie. And I will say, like, if you haven't seen a ton of film noir movies, like, maybe watch some of those classics and then go back to this, because, like, the jokes just don't, probably wouldn't quite land as hard.
I would say particularly Double Indemnity is a big one in there, right?
Yeah, definitely.
That one. Yeah.
Yeah. But I've been watching like noir stuff, you know, for decades at this point. So like it worked really, really well on me. But I love that genre. So I've just never seen anything quite like Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid. So, definitely recommend that. Okay. One last thing before we go, I wanted to, finish off with a listener email here. Lorenzo from Sarasota, Florida wrote in about our recent episode where we talked about our favorite vampire films. And Lorenzo says, both of my favorite live action vampire movies were mentioned, but my number one favorite vampire movie is actually an animated film. And I wanted to give that a shout out. It's called The Batman versus Dracula. And he calls it underseen and underrated and explains that even though it is set in the continuity of an animated series called The Batman that debuted in 2004, quote, the film is a standalone story that can easily also be enjoyed even without the context of the show. He says it's atmospheric and creepy. It stars Peter Stormare as the, or Stormare? Is it Stormare? Stormare?
I've heard both.
Okay. As the voice of Dracula. And it even gives us Vampire Joker with Tom Kenny's Penguin basically filling the Renfield role and delivering comedy gold throughout. So I'd never heard of The Batman versus Dracula, but I'm glad that Lorenzo wrote in and let us know about it. So I can give it a shout out here on the podcast and hopefully inspire other people to check that out. I know it's one of those animated DC films. Have you ever dabbled in that corner of the DC universe, Bill?
I think I've seen one or two. I, of course, used to watch the original Batman animated series from the 90s, as well as a couple episodes of Batman Beyond. So I have a vague idea of what we're just talking about in terms of the visual look, but...
Gotcha. Okay, cool. I think that's going to do it for today's episode of the show. You can find more about all these stories that we mentioned on today's show at slashfilm.com. I will try to link to a few things in the show notes as well. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailback topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really does help us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you all tomorrow.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call. Click Grainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.